From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 8th, 2017. And on this day, the current situation with Senator Susan Collins' support of the Republican tax reform package and new research about stresses on North Atlantic right whales. Those stories ahead in just a moment. It's been a week since she voted for a massive Republican tax overhaul, but the national spotlight is still following Maine Senator Susan Collins. Collins has said her support of the bill is conditional upon securing several changes which have support among Republican Senate leaders, but not necessarily from the Republican-controlled House. We brought in political correspondent Steve Missler to unravel all of these moving parts. Steve, Collins said last week that she voted for the tax bill because she won a series of changes and a promise from President Trump and Senate Leader Mitch McConnell. Can you talk us through what we're talking about there?
Yeah, sure. So two of the changes are tax-related and two are healthcare-related. And that distinction is important, but we'll get to that in a minute. The tax changes, one of them allows people to claim up to $10,000 of property taxes as a deduction on their federal return. The other lowers the threshold to allow individuals to deduct certain medical expenses. The healthcare proposals are separate, but in direct response to a provision in the tax bill that repeals the law forcing most Americans to buy health insurance. The mandate, is, as it's called, is a key provision of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. But Collins says she's worried about projections showing that the repeal, which is in the tax bill, will destabilize the insurance markets, leading to a loss of coverage for about 13 million Americans and a 10% spike in premiums. So she's backing two bills designed to mitigate those effects, although there are several analyses out there that say these bills won't do nearly enough to undo the damage of repealing the mandate.
Now, did Collins, I heard, tell WABI in Bangor yesterday that she won't support the final version of the tax bill if her changes aren't in it?
Sort of. What she said is that she may change her vote if the tax changes aren't in the final bill. She didn't address the health care provisions, which aren't even in the tax bill, but are in a separate spending bill that Congress is trying to pass before the end of the year. But Collins has previously said the health care bills were a condition of her support. She later said that she received assurances from Senate Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump that he'll back the health care bills. But here's the problem. McConnell can promise six ways to Sunday that he wants to support the health care bills, but he has absolutely no control over the GOP-controlled House, which would also be needed to pass the health care bills for them to become law. Now, we heard last week, as early as last week, from a number of House Republicans that they won't support these health care bills. And this week, House Speaker Paul Ryan said he wasn't even part of this deal with McConnell. Without Ryan, even with him, those bills may not pass.
Okay, so Collins is saying that part of the reason she backed the tax overhaul is because she was assured a passage of the health care bills. But you're saying she didn't really have these assurances from House Republicans. Did she forget to ask them?
That's a good question. It's not clear that she ever did. But, you know, she's been in Congress for 20 years, so it's doubtful that she forgot that the House and Senate are needed to ratify a bill. There are several schools of thought about how this happened. One is that Collins was somehow duped into believing that McConnell and President Trump's support would help convince GOP lawmakers to support the health care proposals. That still could happen, but we're not there yet. In fact, the White House wouldn't commit to the proposals when asked about them yesterday, Thursday. The other more cynical explanation is that Collins used these bills and other concessions as cover to support a tax overhaul that's popular with business groups and Republican donors, but so far isn't playing all that well among Democrats and independents, who say the overhaul mostly benefits the wealthy.
Collins has said these health care bills are very important. Here she is talking about them during a forum with reporters last week.
And those two bills would be put on the CR. And then while the tax bill is in conference, the CR presumably would become law. And then the tax bill would come back from conference. So I'm going to know whether or not those provisions made it. And that matters hugely to me.
So hearing that, Steve, I'm wondering if Senator Collins will vote against the tax bill if the health care bills don't pass?
That's really the big question. We don't know what she's going to do. She has not responded to inquiries from us and others, I'm assuming, about whether or not her vote is conditional on passage of these two health care bills, which are in doubt. Her public silence could increase her leverage in negotiations over the final versions of this tax bill. And that's because Senate Republicans can only lose 3 votes to pass the bill with a simple majority. That means Collins could get what she wants, and she's saying that she's still hopeful that that will happen. But she could also lose out if Republicans determine they can pass the bill without her. Either way, the pressure is on her to support the tax bill, which is a huge priority for Republicans who have yet to pass any major legislation since taking full control of the federal government this year.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Maine Public's political correspondent, Steve Missler. Do you need a quick test to see if you have a concussion? Well, there's an app for that. In fact, it was developed by 2 Falmouth High School sophomores who today were announced as winners of the 2017 Congressional App Challenge for Maine's 1st District. Keith Chordal has more.
Let's say you're having a pickup game of basketball. You go up strong for a rebound and knock heads with another player. Hard. You're not feeling quite right. You want to keep playing, but worry that you might have a concussion. You could pull out your smartphone and fire up an app called Head Start, which asks a series of screening questions, beginning with, what year is it?
And the reason we did that is sort of, you know, the first thing that goes when you get a concussion is critical thinking and sort of, you know, awareness of what's around you.
Co-developer Pawan Yeramelli says the screening then tests memorization of color and number sequences as an indicator of short-term memory. And at one point, a motor skills test.
We'll have targets that show up on the screen, and we ask the user to try and tap them one after the other. So that's just sort of to test hand-eye coordination to make sure that, you know, their finger can go where they're looking, because that's often another thing that'll go once you have a concussion.
If you fail the series of tests, the app advises that you seek medical attention. The screening exercises were developed from criteria outlined by the American Neurological Association. And Yeramelli's project partner, John Wallig, who came up with the idea for the app, says the team got help from other experts as well.
Another kind of source of help was my dad, actually. He's a brain surgeon, really nice guy. He kind of went through our app as we were developing it and, you know, double-checked the tests and said, okay, I think this is a good idea.
The Head Start app currently only works on Android devices, but Wallig and Yeramelli say they're thinking of making an Apple-friendly version as well. They'll both travel to a reception on Capitol Hill in April to be recognized with other winners of the Congressional App Challenge. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Keith Chordal.
This was a bad summer for North Atlantic right whales, with 17 deaths in waters off Canada and the U.S. Some of those deaths happened when the whales were struck by ships, but others happened as a result of entanglement when whales become tangled in fishing gear. There are only about 450 of the whales left in the world, and entanglement is now their leading cause of death. What happens to many whales after entanglement has been something of a mystery. Now, stress hormones found in the whale's feces may be providing some clues. A new study in the journal Endangered Species Research that looked at 125 whales over 15 years shows that those who remain tangled in fishing gear for long periods of time, like months or even years, have extremely high levels of stress hormones in their poop. Elizabeth Burgess is a marine biologist at the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life at the New England Aquarium. She says those hormone levels aren't just bad for individual whales. They're bad for the population as a whole.
So what we're seeing by seeing these sky-high hormone levels is that these animals are suffering terribly. So it's not just the external physical trauma that we can see visibly or when we see a dead whale wash ashore, but there is a very strong internal response, and it really speaks to the welfare of these animals.
And do these high stress hormone levels have effects on things like, say, breeding?
Yeah, absolutely. So A heavily mounted stress response is going to impact body condition and energy reserves of these animals. So we start to see emaciations in the population. And then further down the track, it really affects reproduction. And so for females, they tend to breed less. And so that then is going to further impact the population, because if we're not getting new calves into the population, then we're not going to see that population growth. And so this year we've had 17 deaths of North Atlantic right whales and only 5 calves born. So these heavy impacts on the population is really not sustainable.
Just for reference, how few whales do you get down to before the population becomes not viable?
So that's a really great question. And we don't really know, but currently at less than 450 and with a projected trajectory of decline, we're really getting into very scary territory of losing this species.
North Atlantic right whales have been protected for more than 40 years, but unlike some other large whale species, they've not really bounced back. Why is that?
These whales travel along the entire eastern seaboard, and so they really are in very urban habitats. And so management for these this species, they have quite a high interaction with human impacts. And so with warming waters in the Gulf of Maine, what's happening is that that's affected the food source of this whale. And so the whales are moving further north and potentially further offshore. And so they're encountering new areas which previously may not have had strong management protocols in place. So that's why we think we're seeing quite high incidences of entanglements this year.
What does your research suggest in terms of steps to protect the whales, and how confident are you that those will be taken?
So from this study, we're getting very important information about these sort of very chronic levels of stress in a right whale. And so we can use this information to help monitor those living whales and try and highlight early warning signs of impacts in the population before we start to see these mortalities. And so if we're able to get an early warning sign of seeing a strong stress response throughout across the population, then we can use that to really engage a management practice or a management change. And so at the moment, what we're doing is we're really engaging with the fishing gear. We're having open conversations about some solutions that we can come up with so that we can continue fishing, but that we're not entangling right whales.
Elizabeth Burgess is a marine biologist at the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life at the New England Aquarium. You can find more information and a link to the report at mainepublic.org. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, December 8th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.